For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hello.
How are things?
Things are good. Enjoying the playoffs. It's been a crazy playoff season. Crazy, crazy playoff season. And actually, you know, as of this recording, we're recording this the night after, we almost had a new addition to this thing that we were going to talk about here. We are obviously talking about playoff buzzer beaters, and I was keenly watching the Nets Bucks series and saying, or the right. Game 7, and thinking, oh man, this looks like the type of game where we'd have a buzzer beater. We got real close. We got a foot and about 1.1 second away from adding a new entry to this series, but it ended up not happening. But what a playoffs it's been so far.
Yeah, some exciting series going on. Yeah, maybe we will add to this list after we, you know, as the playoffs advance. We're nearly through the second round as we're recording this. But yeah, so we decided to dig into the history of NBA buzzer beaters a little bit. There's a great list at basketballreference.com. We'll, of course, include the link to that in the show notes for those brews. We're going to focus on ones that ended up clinching a playoff series. So we're going to split this up into two parts. We're going to talk about the early rounds here, get into the later rounds in our part two. But so I think this will be a fun topic, some exciting things. I mean, it's hard to imagine anything in sports beating a, you know, buzzer beating playoff series win. I mean, you know, I guess it can happen in other sports, you know, game winning home run or, you know, last second touchdown or whatever. But there's, you know, obviously we are the, you know, NBA fans. That's the sport that we love the most. And it's really hard to beat just the energy that comes from the players and the crowd and everybody, you know, when that happens.
Yeah, there's something special about a playoff buzzer beater that I think beats even like a walk-off home run or whatever. And those are great. I mean, those are, you know, I've been in the building for like, you know, walk-off playoff, you know, home or, you know, like baseball, you know, not necessarily World Series, but like, you know, some playoff walk-off hits or walk-off home runs or whatever. And it's a pretty incredible thing. It's pretty awesome to be. But there is something, like you said, about that entire arena, just everybody 100% focused on one player. It's usually like a one-on-one thing. It's usually one guy coming down to do something, or it's usually, there's just something special about the NBA playoff buzzer beaters. I don't know why. It probably is my bias towards basketball, but it's just, I don't know. There's just something incredible about them.
Yeah, well, it can come from anywhere. You know, where, you know, in baseball, you know, it's going to be, you know, the hitter is going to either do it or not do it, you know.
Right, exactly.
And in football, it's, you know, the quarterback's going to be involved for the, you know, 95% of the time. But, you know, basketball, you know, like anybody, you know, Derek McKee.
We'll talk about Derek McKee here in a minute. Yes, even Derek McKee. Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, this is, it's pretty incredible, like we said. So, shall we dive into it?
Let's do it.
All right. So, yeah, the first one we'll talk about, Derek McKee. This is May 5th.
Is that why you mentioned him? What about? You're good at this. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Rich. I appreciate that. You know, we've had some practice on this. May 5th, 1989, a playoff series between the Houston Rockets and the Seattle Supersonics. You remember them, Seattle Supersonics?
I do. I hope to maybe remember them again sometime soon. But I do remember the Seattle Supersonics. Yeah, this is the weird, like, can you believe there was a period like late 80s, early 90s, pre Kemp and Payton Sonics that are like, yeah, they were like pretty, they were like okay too, you know what I mean? Like they you think that it's like, oh, they saved this franchise, and it's like they're good, they're just, you know, then they would get Kevin Payton and they'd be really, really good.
Right, yeah, they had a little dip in the mid-80s, but this was definitely a solid team with some fun playoff things. You know, the Sonics in 89, they're 47-35, you know, key players outside of McKee. They got Dale Ellis, they got Michael Cage, who the Clippers were like, we don't really like you, so we don't like good players, we're just going to give you the Sonics. Nate McMillan, Xavier McDaniel, Alton Lister. You know, so some good players, some fun players there. And like I said, right on the cusp of, you know, getting Gary Payton and Sean Kemp, and, you know, and then becoming, you know, kind of the really well-known teams they had in the '90s. But, you know, this is game four of the series. You know, evenly matched teams, the Rockets 45-37, similar record, similar, you know, quality team. They have, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon, obviously superstar, surrounded by, you know, some solid but not necessarily spectacular players. I mean, the other best players probably Otis Thorpe. They do have Sleepy Floyd, who's known for some playoff heroics, getting a little bit older there. Mike Woodson. I forgot Mike Woodson kind of ended up having a late career, you know, stint with the Rockets. And then a player I was not familiar with, Buck Johnson. And this, you may or may not realize that this is not, of course, you know, Magic Johnson, whose nickname is also Buck. He did not spend 1 year with the Houston Rockets and decided to go by his other nickname. Yeah. I that may be a surprise to you, Rich.
A little bit. Yeah. When I saw Buck Johnson, I'm like, oh, he means Magic Johnson, of course. But right, no, that is not the case. So.
Right. Yes. Alphonso Buck Johnson Jr. He played seven seasons in the NBA with the Rockets and the Bulls. He also played 13 additional years across the world. Maccabi Tel Aviv, the Birmingham Magicians, the Wichita Falls Texans, kind of a wide range of teams across the world. But yeah, he had quite the storied career, played at Alabama. Not a whole lot else here, but in terms of we did not dig too deeply into Alphonso Johnson Jr., but just certainly a noteworthy name here.
Absolutely. And this is an era of the Rockets that we have done a show about many, probably a few years ago at this point, where,
right.
You know, people like similarly how people kind of forget the Sonics were like pretty good before Kemp and Payton. People also forget that like the Rockets were in turmoil in like certain Hakeem eras. This, sure. They're still kind of they're a little kind of riding the high of, you know, making the finals, you know, a few years prior. And they're still kind of riding the high of, hey, this Hakeem guy, he's really great. He's got everything together. It's going to come in another year or so where people are going to say, and we found exact like clips and quotes and all this sort of stuff of like, you know, hey, I don't know if this guy's the real deal. I don't know if this guy can lead us to titles. And Hakeem is kind of like, hey, I don't know if I want to be here. This town kind of sucks. Or I'm kind of done, and all of it gets washed away obviously in 94 and 95 when he win those back-to-back titles, and then it's like, oh, Hakeem and Houston, and it was it is kind of funny that, yeah, this weird period where like things are not going great, like they're still doing okay, but there is a lot of questions of, is this the guy that is going to lead us to NBA finals? Is this the guy that's going to be, you know, the man for our team? And Hakeem, on, you know, similarly on his side, thinking, hey, is this where I want to spend the rest of my career, in Houston playing for the Rockets? And like, yeah, it would become very obvious by 94 95 that he would be a legend in that team, and that you know, it would all work out. But it is funny that there is that time period, and we're not there just yet in 1989, but we're approaching it pretty soon, where it looks like there's a breakup about to happen between Hakeem and Houston.
Sure. Yeah, like I said, they were definitely kind of perennially disappointing. I mean, yeah, they had some, you know, solid seasons, they had some, you know, kind of disappointing seasons, but they, you know, having a great player like Hakeem Olajuwon, you know, there's kind of an expectation, hey, you're going to be a 50-plus win team every season if you put anything decent around him, and they were kind of not really doing that. And obviously, things would get settled later, but as you mentioned, it got very close to them kind of just, you know, moving away from Hakeem and just starting over, and obviously that would have been a bad decision. So luckily they didn't do that. But back to the Sonics, and Derek McKee in particular, you know, you think of Derek McKee, and you probably think, like, oh, yeah, he was – defensive specialist, you know, really great solid player for the Pacers in the mid to late 90s. But yeah, he actually, yeah, he had some scoring chops early on in his career. You know, this season, you know, he averaged 15.9 points per game, which was the most he ever averaged in the league. He'd been in the league a couple years, drafted by the Sonics, ninth overall pick in the 87 draft, ahead of guys like Reggie Miller, Horace Grant, Reggie Lewis. So, you know, I mean, you know, ended up having a solid career. Probably you would have rather had – he probably would have rather had Reggie Miller than Derek McKee.
Sure,
maybe, but,
sure.
But, yeah, you know, definitely, you know, had a good, solid, long career. And, yeah, you know, in this game, you know, the Sonics actually – they were up by 9, 6 minutes to go. But the Rockets, you know, came charging back. By the way, this is – game four of the series. So the Rockets on the brink of elimination, the Sonics are up 2-1. And then, yeah, 7 seconds left. Sleepy Floyd finds Mike Woodson. Mike Woodson, top of the key. Mike Woodson, he's about to have his moment.
It's his
ball. He launches the three. He's and open. And then, yeah, it's nothing. Literally nothing. But Purvis Short's there. Purvis Short, grabs the rebound, then sends the pass wide open. Sleepy Floyd hits a three to tie the game with just 1 second remaining. Sleepy Floyd doing it again in the playoffs, obviously known for like that incredible performance against the Lakers just a few years later, breaking up playoff quarter scoring records and scoring more than 50 in a playoff game against the Lakers. Sleepy Floyd delivering in the clutch. You think clutch, you think sleepy.
Absolutely. Yeah. The name does not fit the, right. Or maybe it does. Maybe he's just like, yeah. he's always like, whatever, man. What's the game? 1 second left. I'll hit the shot. It's fine. Whatever.
He wakes up when it's playoff time.
Right. Or he wants to go to bed. So he's just like, let's just end this game. Right. Let's end this series. Yeah. I'm sleepy. I want to go to bed. I'm just going to hit the shot if you guys need to. But it's an interesting play because, you have Sleepy Floyd who seems like the type of guy. And it's clear that Seattle knows that Sleepy Floyd is a good clutch player. So they kind of blitz him. They're like, no, do not let Sleepy Floyd get a shot. Leaving Mike Woodson, so open. It's unbelievable how open Mike Woodson is on this play. And he, like you said, he's like, oh, baby, Mike, it's our time. He launches it. And my man is short by like 5 feet. It's not even, it's not good. It's not good at all. But thankfully, Purvis Short, who was, blitzing, the baseline, comes up, grabs it, right place, right time, grabs the air ball, sends it to Sleepy Floyd. Sleepy hits the three. Pandemonium. It's an incredible moment here for Sleepy Floyd, who was a really good three-point shooter as well in these early days. He's sixth in the NBA, 37.3% from three in 1989. And in his career, obviously the attempts are not going to be very high because it is, the NBA and at this era and the era that he played. Only 1.7 three-point attempts per game, but 32.4%. Overall, but that 1989 really stands. 37.3 on 3.6.
I should clarify the attempts were six in the NBA.
I'm sorry.
3.6 attempts. It was the sixth in the NBA, which just illustrates, of course, how much the league has changed. But yeah, that's obviously 38%. That's I didn't look up where that ranked in the league, but that's certainly a very high percentage. For that time, that's a great percentage even today. So.
That's a great percentage for that amount of shots getting put up, especially in 1989 for sure. So yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool. We always talk about how it's funny how the three-point, people do not remember how long it took, people to actually start hitting three-pointers, and it literally took them, moving the line up and saying, okay, here you go, and then people did it, and then they moved the line back, and everybody was like, oh, yeah, that's stupid, let's not do that anymore, and then it took, another 10 years until people started hitting threes. It's pretty remarkable how the three-point shot evolved in the NBA, but yeah, Sleepy Floyd did it. Yeah. 1 second remaining. I don't know why this is on our list, because that's not a buzzer beater, Jason, so I don't know. I don't know how Derek McKee gets involved in this, but all right, go ahead.
Right. Well, our good friend Nick McMillan, coach of America's team right now, he inbounded the ball and he found Derek McKee on the block, and McKee just rises up, puts the ball in and puts it right into the basket. Everyone was really drawn to Dale Ellis, was thinking like, oh yeah, Dale Ellis, he's their go-to guy. He's going to take the shot. He's going, Akeem even is going out to chase him, and they pretty much leave the interior alone. And then, McKee insane athleticism, just jumps and gets the ball, and just perfect timing. Absolutely incredible. And then right there, just, a really understated reaction, basically just slaps his hands together once and that's it. Seattle runs into the tunnel, on to the second round, good, exciting things. And they're going to take on the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm sure it's going to go really well for them.
They're going to definitely do well in that series, I think, for sure.
Right. I'm not even going to bother looking it up because I'm sure, they advance further. You probably even made the finals.
Well, the 89 Lakers didn't have Magic, as we prefaced there. It took one year soaring to Houston. So that's
It's really weird that Buck Johnson was just, kind of on the bench for the Rockets. Like, maybe you could have used him in the game. I don't know. That seems like a weird decision. But maybe, go with Mike Woodson. Why not?
Absolutely. Know? Yeah, but it's a really cool play here that McKee does. It's one of the Nate McMillan smartly realizes, hey, we got 1 second here. Like, if I inbound it to Dale Ellis, like, that might might not go well. But Houston obviously right. thinking, oh man, well, Dale Ellis is going to get this ball and launch a shot immediately. Sure. And right. very smart by Seattle. It feels like the type of play that they would do in practice every so often. It'd just be like, hey, sure. what I'm going to do is from the midcourt, I'm going to throw it near the basket. You're going to jump and try to put it in. And they do it. And it's awesome. And it's like a legit 1 second play. You know what I mean? Not really. And is it Derek, you know, Derek Fisher, you know, we'll talk about that.
Right.
But like
right,
this one is legit. Like, yeah, this gets done in one. I mean, from the time it's launched in the air to the time Derek McKee touches it, it's only about a second and a half or something like that. So it's really, really cool.
Yeah. Right.
And yeah, just awesome play by McKee, and it just totally catches Houston off guard, and Seattle moves on to the next round. So.
Yeah. And then Houston, yeah, they would, well, you know, they would, this was their second straight exit in the first round. That would happen 4 years in a row. They missed the playoffs in 92. Then finally, you know, things would turn around once they hired Rutan Jonovich and, you know, upgraded the roster a little bit. But yeah, this was definitely, you know, Houston was kind of stuck in no man's land after, you know, having so much promise with Samson and Olajuwon making the 86 finals and all that good stuff. But like I said, things would eventually, turn around for them, but you know, rough period for Rockets. But I mean, yeah, not that, you know, making the playoffs is certainly fine, but you know, given what you have in Akeem, you feel like, you know, should have done more.
All right, ready for our next buzzer beater here?
I am totally ready. I'm excited about this. I'm sure right. it happened like way later. I'm sure there's like a long period of time between buzzer beaters.
You're absolutely right. Because Derek McKee, right. May 5th, 1989. This one, you have to wait all the way to two more days until May 7th, 1989.
May 7th is
a long time. I mean, 48 hours, a lot can happen.
A lot can happen.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. And this man is Michael Jordan, and he plays for the Chicago Bulls, and this is the Eastern Conference first round.
I believe it's pronounced Jordan.
Jordan. Michael Jordan. Yeah.
Right. Yes, I believe that's correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's Rodrigo Bobo. Bois, father, I believe, is
I believe so, yes. Right.
Famed Dallas Maverick, Rodrigo Bobois.
I believe
is his father, Michael Jordan. But 1989, 2 days after Derek McKee, Eastern Conference first round, game five. Yeah, this is the one. This is the one we're talking about here. You probably know what we're doing here. Third-seeded Cavaliers, they finished the season 57-25, setting a franchise high and ties for the second-best record in the NBA. The Cavaliers have three All-Stars this year. Mark Price, Brad Doherty, and Larry Nance all selected to the 1989 NBA All-Star game. They're set to do battle with the sixth-seeded Chicago Bulls in the first round. I mean, obviously, Cavaliers, the higher seed. This should go well. This is the first round, as we mentioned, in 1989 with the Game 4. Again, these are five-game rounds, so this is the Game 5, the pivotal game, the decider game of the first round. The Bulls, they finished fifth in the Central with a 47-35 record. Michael Jordan leads the league in scoring at 32.5 points per game. He is, of course, selected to the 1989 All-Star Game, which makes sense. He would then finish second in MVP voting. He had won the award the year prior, but this year he couldn't take it away from, I don't want to name the name because it ruins one of our earlier jokes that we made, so we'll just continue to move on and act like we didn't do that. Sure. It's a guy named Irvin Johnson, I think future Milwaukee Buck, big man.
That makes sense. Yeah,
it's that guy. I believe it's that Irvin Johnson, not the
Irvin Johnson,
not the other Irvin Johnson. Anyway, this series, a playoff rematch of last season's Eastern Conference first round series, in which, you guessed it, yes, the Bulls won the best of five series 3-2. The Cavaliers, though, they are ready this year. They're not going to let that happen again. They sweep the regular season games against the Bulls 6-0, including, and this it's fresh in their mind, a 90-84 victory in the final regular season game of the year, and they rest four of their best players, Ron Harper, Mark Price, Brad Doherty, and Larry Nance, in that game. They're not even trying to win, and they still beat this Bulls team. So, I mean, come on.
Yeah, they've got it. Yeah, they've got this. Yeah,
this is done. Problem. This is over. So, the series is tied 2-2. You need to win a game five here to advance in the series. The pivotal game was it's close most of the game, and even more so towards the end of the game, as there's six lead changes in the final few minutes of regulation. This, unfortunately forgotten in this moment, is that Craig Elo, Cavaliers guard Craig Elo, he gives his squad the 199 lead with 3 seconds left, goes bam, my moment in the sun, baby. Everybody will remember the name Craig Elo for putting Michael Jordan and the Bulls away. But no, as you know Craig Elo from another thing. Jordan takes the inbound pass, creates space over Elo, hits it, the iconic foul line jumper at the buzzer. 101-100 Bulls. Michael Jordan pumps his fist. He's happy. Guys are screaming. It's incredible. Craig Elo in another great moment, unfortunately. He falls to the floor. He just, like, his body loses all ability to stand. It's just, like, it's so heartbreaking. And God, it's played 9 trillion times over and over and over again. But it's just Craig Elo being like, oh, come on. Like, I just did it. I just hit a shot. Like, what the hell? Why did this guy do this? And it's over. Jordan finishes the game with 44 points on 17 of 32 shooting. Bulls coach Doug Collins, who would be fired, by the way, pretty soon after this. But hey, you know what? He has his moment in the sun here. So, which we'll talk about in a minute. It's actually pretty interesting how this was shot production-wise. But Bulls coach Doug Collins, when asked what the play was, he said the play was, quote, that was the get the ball to Michael and everybody get the expletive out of the way. So get the fuck out of the way. It's what Doug was saying there, which is not a bad play for the 1989 Chicago Bulls. So just
it was a play they ran a lot.
Yes, they did it a lot during the last the subsequent few years. But yeah, especially in 89 and 88, they said, you know what? The rest of you guys are not very good, so why don't you give the ball to Michael Jordan and walk away? So
honestly, I feel like they maybe should have given it to Brad Sellers, but that's just me. You know,
right. Rory Spiro probably should have got a touch or two. So
maybe that would have been good. You know,
but that did not happen anyway. So the Bulls, of course, they win this series. They go on to the East Finals, where they are eliminated by the Detroit Pistons in 6 games. But the lasting image of this moment is obviously Jordan's, you know, crazy celebration here, the leap into the air as Elo falls to the ground in despair. The scene has become a part of, I mean, we all know this. I mean, you can close your eyes and you've seen that, you know exactly how it looks and exactly what's going on. But what's weird, though, is it was not shown to viewers as part of the televised game. It was on a CBS broadcast with Dick Stockton and Hubie Brown. I love the idea that Hubie Brown is still kicking all these years later. He's, you know, he's the CBS guy then. He's still doing games this day. I love Hubie Brown. But anyway, CBS never aired this replay during the game telecast, nor was Jordan's celebration caught by the sideline press box camera used for most of the action. Instead, when this thing happens, fans see, which is another thing that is shown in the clip as well.
Sure.
Fancy the celebration of Doug Collins running onto the court, just looking for somebody to hug. Like, he's just, Doug Collins just runs on the court, and he's just running around aimlessly, just like, somebody hug me, this is amazing, this is incredible. And then you see, you know, Phil Jackson in some symbolism here, Doug Collins kind of walking, running past, you know, Phil Jackson to celebrate with his team as Phil's about to go and take a job here in a few minutes.
That's fine, yeah. But, I have something I'd like to mention here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very CBS to focus on the coach rather than the player.
Of course, especially when it's Michael freaking Jordan. What are you doing?
Right. that's very CBS to do that. We've talked about some of the CBS broadcasts, more like 70s and early 80s. But very, very much to do that. And you know, granted, like what Collins was doing was also like pretty exciting, interesting. Like in the moment, you focus on Michael Jordan, obviously in retrospect, but in the moment, I can at least see, like, oh wow, you know, you what Doug Collins was doing was unusual. What Jordan was doing was unusual. So, what Collins was doing was worth noting. But yes, not ahead of what Michael Jordan was doing.
No. And you're right. That was obvious. It definitely a CBS thing. Is CBS loved coaches and
they
loved focusing on that aspect of
of
the game, which, you know, I sometimes was fine. It was fine in like the early 80s when like you were still trying to establish these stars. But I think by this point, like, you know, maybe just focus on Michael Jordan. Sorry, he's like been an MVP. He's like already like an iconic star. Like, I don't know, maybe put the camera on Michael Jordan. I don't know. That's just me. But yeah, insanely that original shot that is now so iconic and used everywhere was not even shown on the normal broadcast. So pretty good stuff there. But as we said, the 1989 playoffs, Jordan averages 34.8 points per game, 7.6 assists, 7 rebounds, and 2 steals, 2.5 steals per game in 17 games. Of course, it's not good enough. They lose to the Detroit Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Bulls decide, let's try something different here. This isn't working with Doug Collins. They promote his assistant, Phil Jackson, to head coach the following the season. They do another 7-game series loss or another loss in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Pistons, and then finally break through in 1991 and win their first NBA championship. The Cavs, the poor Cavs. So this would just stab them in the heart a little bit. They would fall to 42-40 the following season, still limp into the playoffs. The next year they would fall below .500, But as we, and we did a series about this, or we talked about this Cavaliers team on an episode about a year or so ago, is that after this brief period where it feels like, oh man, this is done, these Cavs are, this is over with this unit, this crew's not going to happen, they do return to the playoffs, and they win back-to-back 50-point game, or 50-game seasons in 92 and 93. But, well, unfortunately, we're not done with them in this multiple-part series here. We'll unfortunately get to that later. Yeah. I hate to say it, Cavs fans, but we will check in with you guys in a few years in the Eastern Conference semifinals. So,
for sure. Sorry. For sure. Yeah. You know,
it's the same guy. It's the same player. Hey, same team. Yeah, it's awful. It's us.
Yeah. Hey.
It's Michael. No. It's Michael right. Crushing you again.
So. Mikhail Jordan. Yeah. He really. Yeah. He was pretty good.
Yeah, particularly against the Cavs. Yeah, that's
sorry. Yeah.
Guys. Hey, LeBron. Yeah, you guys came back from 3-1. Stop your complaining, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
But anyway, 1989 playoffs. Those wild.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. That's that's some good stuff, absolutely. So next we move on to more recent times. And we're going to fast forward to 2014. The Western Conference first round, and it is going to be the Trailblazers and our good friends, the Houston Rockets. I'm sure, yeah, things are going to go better for the Houston Rockets this time. They're not going to get beaten again. No. I mean, come on, no, you know they're not going to be cursed. No, it's it is the 3-seeded Blazers versus. I'm sorry, no, I'm looking at the wrong notes here. What were the what was the seed here? I'm let's. Go back real quick. Sorry. We can edit this out.
Yeah.
All right. The 5-seeded Blazers versus the 4-seeded Rockets. We are in game 6, a tightly contested series between the two teams. The Blazers top players. We got a young Damian Lillard, who we'll be talking more about here, is involved in some pretty important playoff moments. We still have LaMarcus Aldridge. We got Nicholas Batum. We got Wes Matthews. We got Robin Lopez. We got Mo Williams making an appearance there. I kind of forgot about the Mo Williams Blazers experience. Meanwhile, on the Rockets, we've got James Harden and Dwight Howard. You know, what a pair of personalities that was for the Rockets. We also got Chandler Parsons. Remember him?
I do remember Chandler Parsons. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got,
I think he's still getting paid like $20 million a year, right? Like, probably, is that finally done? Like, cause there was the weird period where everybody was like, we need to pay Chandler Parsons a lot of money. And he's I'm hurt. And then someone was like, hey, you know what? We're still going to pay Chandler Parsons. Like, he's like, hey, I can't really play. And they're like, yeah, that's fine. Here, you want a new contract? Yeah. And he's like, I really haven't even played in the last contract, but sure.
Yeah.
Like, get that paper, man. Get that paper. Hey. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got Omer Asik, we've got Patrick Beverley, we got Jeremy Lin coming.
Yeah, oh, this is here. During the Rockets period of the bubble contracts, or what was the term that was used? Oh shit, I forgot what it was called, because like Jeremy Lin and Omer Asik were paid like $2 million their first year, like $2 million the second year, and then like $19 million in the third year of the contract. It was some weird thing that Daryl Morey was doing at this time, which it ended up it got them some pretty good players, but I don't know if it ended up working in the long term. So.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Yes. So back to Damian Lillard, of course. You know, this is May 2nd, 2014. And, you know, Lillard, not really like super, touted, coming in college. He played for Weber State in Utah, member of the Big Sky Conference. Everyone loves the Big Sky Conference, of course. But did really well in college, skipped a senior year, entered the NBA draft. He was drafted 6th overall and pretty much was great, from the beginning, was the fourth unanimous rookie of the year after Blake Griffin, David Robinson, and Ralph Sampson. Also joined Oscar Robertson and Allen Iverson, the only rookies in NBA history to have 1,500 points and 500 assists for a season. And then really, his second year, which is what we're here, 2014, made his first All-Star game, helped Portland finish with 54 wins, their best record since 2009. And Portland they've had a lot of unfortunate luck in their franchise history, but, they had just kind of come off an era that was expected to be centered by Brandon Roy and Greg Oden as, possibly you know, a really strong championship level era. And then unfortunately injuries felled both those guys, but they were able to kind of, you know, they had some good fortune with getting Lillard where they got him. And then, you know, were able to tally, you know, a really good, run over the last, 6-7 years now. So, yes. And then in the meantime, you know, again, Houston Rockets, Dwight Howard had actually, this was his first season with the team, you know, the shocking people leaving Los Angeles, coming to the Rockets, obviously expectations were high. And, you know, despite winning 54 games, you know, obviously really good record. Harden and Dwight didn't really seem to gel. You know, the coach was Kevin McHale, which, you know,
that, probably didn't help matters that much.
Yeah. No. Yes. And, and this is really, you know, you look back at this, a really all-time great series. I mean, the margins here, game one is 2 points. Game two is 7 points. Game three is 5 points. Game four is 3 points. And then game five is 10 points. The only, you know, margin that's double digits. You know, these are all really close games. There's three overtimes in this series, which, you know, is pretty incredible. And, you know, the Trailblazers had just had a really, you know, as a franchise, it had emotional loss. Dr. Jack Ramsey, you know, of course, the former coach, led them to the 1977 championship. He died just days prior to the pivotal game six. So a lot of just emotions, I'm sure, with the franchise and the crowd and everything. And yeah, the Blazers are down by 2/9 of a second left. And Lillard just, you know, gets the inbounds pass and very coolly hits the buzzer beating three, winning the series 4-2. You know, the shot becomes known by Blazers fans as 0.9 with 0.9 seconds left. The first franchise playoff series win in 14 years, which is, kind of surprising because, you know, again, the Blazers have generally been a good franchise.
Yeah, they were good most of that time. Yeah,
right,
they were, like,
exactly.
Pretty good a lot of that
yeah.
time. Just
yeah.
Not good enough to win a – yeah, that boggled my mind when I saw that stat. I was like, right. Really? And I was like, I got to double check. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's true. Like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that's pretty just pretty shocking right there. So, yeah, and then Amet really cements his reputation for just, you know, Damian Lillard being a big shot player, a guy who just comes up in the big moments and, really delivers the big time. And, right after the play, like, the motor center's going crazy, everyone's excited. He actually grabs the PA mic and yells "Rip City," you know, just a really like incredible moment of, you know, just engaging the crowd and the energy. It's just definitely, some exciting stuff. And then, you know, Lillard's quote afterwards, like, "Hey, that's definitely the biggest shot of my life." And then low pause so far. So, well, we'll see. Maybe you have a bigger one. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll find out. That seems awfully presumptuous, Damian.
Yeah,
but,
right. Yeah.
I mean, I guess on April 23rd, 2019, you may have done right. a very similar thing here as yeah. we move on to the Western Conference first round. The third seed versus the sixth seed, your 2019 Blazers versus your 2019 Thunder. And gosh darn it, Damian Lillard was right. He would do it again here. Dame Time Part 2, April 2019, as we said. Again, Western Conference first round. This one is even more of a franchise-altering play. Not as much for the Blazers, but God, so much so for the Oklahoma City Thunder. This seems like so long ago, given what's happened to the Thunder since then. But we'll kind of discuss how this pretty much ended the dynasty or pseudo-dynasty or ended this run or whatever you want to say about it. But this is an absolute franchise-altering play by Damian Lillard here. So in 2019, Lillard and the Blazers seemed determined to kind of work things through and kind of get through. You know, they had made 5 straight playoffs by 2019, but they only reached the semifinals twice and never yet reached the conference semifinals. So they're looking this year to kind of, okay, let's get this thing under control. Let's go. Lillard, his running mate, CJ McCollum, are still there. They're still good. What's cool about this year, though, the Blazers have one of the best offenses in the league. They're third in offensive rating as well, so they really kind of overpower. They really kind of put a charge into the offense and thinking, okay, that's going to lead us through here. And they're matched up in the first round with the Oklahoma City Thunder. This is a very different Thunder team than years past, though. Obviously, Kevin Durant, a few years prior, had left for Golden State. The Thunder and Russell Westbrook did the solo star thing and It didn't quite work. I mean, hey, Russell Westbrook won an MVP and it was fun and he got triple doubles and all that sort of stuff. But the team realized, okay, we're probably not going to win with Reggie Jackson and Russell Westbrook as our two best players. So they build a super team kind of. In 2018, the team brings both Paul George and Carmelo Anthony in to join an already pretty talented team featuring Russell Westbrook, Steven Adams, Andre Roberson, and some other solid rotation pieces. Needless to say, the Carmelo Anthony and Thunder thing did not work very well. They were eliminated in the first round by the Utah Jazz. In 2019, they decide, okay, we're done with the Carmelo thing. That's done, but they decide, hey, we got a good thing here in Paul George, Russell Westbrook, and the rest of this team, and they do that. Russell Westbrook has a great year. He averages a triple-double. Paul George scores 28 points per game that season. Dennis Schroeder, Steven Adams, Jeremy Grant round out a really talented and still pretty young Thunder team as well that looks to get out of the first round. And then, well, this game happens. So the Blazers win the first three games of the series. Oklahoma City wins game three. The Blazers win game four. Then Lillard, in game five, sticks a dagger in their hearts. In game five of the 2019 Western Conference Finals, he hits a game-winning three-pointer at the buzzer from 36 feet away.
Yeah.
Paul George guards him as good as you could possibly. I mean, he's guarding him from basically half court, thinking, all right, no, this guy's not making a 35-plus-foot three-pointer over me. I'm not letting it happen. And goddammit, it still happened because Paul George tries like hell to do it. Damian Lillard launches the shot at about 1.4 seconds, and it goes in. The second series-clinching shot of Damian Lillard's career. Damian Lillard waves goodbye to the Thunder bench after nailing the shot, which is just an awesome moment. It's so, cool. Little did he know, like literally, like all those, like, most of those guys would, like, quite literally be gone from the team pretty quickly.
Right.
Yeah, the wave is incredible. They, you know, the Thunder talked a lot of shit. We'll talk about it. They talked shit even after the series as well. So this felt a little special for Lillard and the Blazers, but. Anyway, Lillard does that. He waves to the crowd. Then he gets promptly mobbed by his teammates. You also see, it's a very iconic shot as well, where he looks into the camera and kind of nods. Like, they've used that in commercials over and over again. As he's getting mobbed by his teammates, then he has a moment to look up and look directly at the TV camera and just kind of like nod. Like, yep, I did that. This is it. We did that. But an awesome moment. Better that it happens both times in front of the Portland crowd as well. Because they just go absolutely nuts both times. It's super, super cool. But anyways, the Thunder leaving the floor. Lillard circles the court, high-fives fans. The crowd chants MVP. Damian Lillard says it was a great feeling when it left my hands. It felt good. Some other stats in this game. Lillard has 10 three-pointers in this game. That breaks the Portland franchise record. And he ends up with 50 points in the game, 34 points in the first half. And then, as I said, the Thunder were pretty yappy throughout the series. And Paul George, after this shot, this is a, I don't know. I'll let you decide, Jason, what you think of this. If this is a good quote or a bad quote from one Paul George. So he says, quote, "That's a bad shot. That's a bad shot. I don't care what anybody says. That's a bad shot. But hey, he made it. That story won't be told that it was a bad shot. We live with that."
Seems a little sour grapes.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's like,
I mean, it was a pretty, like, the thing is, I mean, George definitely, you know, obviously he was tracking him, but he wasn't, like, there was definitely some space there that Lillard was able to create because George probably wasn't quite as close to him as, you know, he ideally would have been. I mean, obviously he was afraid of him driving. So I can see where, you know, if he's thinking at that point, well, this is a bad shot, he won't take it from here, then that was obviously a mistake. And right, we're, you know, this is just a couple years ago now, but we're still, I think the mentality in the league has changed over the past 2 or 3 years about, you know, extending the range, obviously Steph being a big part of that, and Lord both being a big part of that, about like, hey, these guys are now starting to take like even deeper three pointers, you know, more routinely. And so, I mean, it's not a bad shot if you can make it, you know, a decent percentage of the time. And, you know, Lillard and Steph and Trae Young and those guys, you know, are able to do that.
I don't have the exact name of the guy, but there's a quote of a Portland trainer saying that before the game and throughout this entire series, Lillard was taking shots from 35 feet just to see, like, hey, can I do this? And little by little, he started getting better and better at him. So every day he'd come to the arena and he'd take these 35 footers. And this, you know, the trainer says, man, one of these is going to happen and you're going to make this shot. And Damon's like, eh, yeah, maybe, man. I'm hitting them like pretty easily. And
yeah,
yeah, and maybe in, you know, 2015, it would have been kind of ridiculous. But I feel like in 2019, I mean, how many times we see Steph Curry pull up from like the logo and make shots by 2019? Like we had already seen that quite a few times. So yeah, it's a bad shot in like for like me to do. Like, I don't think like, yeah, or like
right.
certain
yeah.
players. But I think at this time, Damon Lillard and Steph Curry and some of your other guys have sort of established that it's not as bad as you would think for them. And I mean, Paul George, I mean, he doesn't need to really say it because he did great defense. He could just say, hey, I defended that as well as you can defend the shot and he still made it. So you know what? Whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a way better way to say it than like, that's a bad shot. Cause it's not really a bad shot for someone like Damian Lillard who makes shots from that distance, you know, semi-frequently. So.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's interesting. Cause it kind of like, Paul George is kind of, it kind of cemented, you know, like Paul George has had an interesting relationship with the playoffs because he's had some really big moments where he's done really well. And then he's had some, you know, major moments of disappointment. And, you know, then he kind of got that playoff P reputation. And then when he did the disappointing times, you know, then people kind of made fun of him for being playoff P. And then saying something like this also adds to like, oh yeah, playoff P, ha ha ha. Of course, the playoffs that are happening right now, he's going the other way and playing really well and, you know, advancing the Clippers to the conference finals for the first time. So, but yeah, this is just sort of like a, you know, Paul George just kind of says things sometimes and you just kind of be like, yeah, okay, you take it in stride and be whatever. But it is kind of interesting. And yeah, this moment basically ended Russell Westbrook's career on the Thunder and sent, you know, Paul George sent packing, of course, you know, thanks to, you know, 5 draft picks being offered by the Clippers in as a way of getting Kawhi Leonard. But yeah, but in a way, this basically ended, you know, this era of the Thunder franchise.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So like by, you know, in 2019, 2020 or 2020, which seems like it was 19 years ago, but was actually just last year. That team would win 44 games, but they would do so without Paul George or Russell Westbrook. That year's Thunder's team obviously would be led by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Danilo Gallinari, and Chris Paul. So very, very, very different team there. But yeah, it was over for that. It was like, all right, this isn't going to work. Like Westbrook, you're gone. George, you're gone. We're rebuilding after years and years and years of it. Felt like the Thunder were anti-rebuild, and we're just like, no. We're just going to keep going with this unit. We're going to keep kind of adding pieces. Dame time killed them, man. They were done. And then, you know, obviously the Thunder have set themselves up for, you know, a very good future. But this was the last moment, the last hurrah of, really, you could say the last moment of that first Oklahoma City Thunder, you know, dynasty run, whatever you want to call it, with Kevin Durant. And really, I mean, honestly, you can date it back to Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Russell Westbrook and making that finals, you know, as a very young team against the LeBron's Miami Heat or whatever. And yeah, this is the final moment. And it's really that shot that they're just like, all right, fuck it, we're done. Like, it's over. It's just we're done. We gotta move on. We gotta do something different. So when he waves goodbye, little does he know, he almost quite literally waves goodbye to that franchise being good for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years. But hey, they ended up being good in 2019, 2020.
Well, that's true. They did have one more year, you know, with obviously, you know, Chris Paul, Danilo Gallinari, SGA. You know, they definitely but now they're, of course, now they're rebuilding. But yeah, it definitely, like I said, it was definitely a swan song for an era, absolutely. And, you know, what an interesting moment there. You know, something that I think, if it's not iconic now, is going to be one of those, like, you know, iconic things that sort of, like, lives on for a long time.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. A really cool moment. And again, like I said, it's just awesome that it happens, you know, in Portland both times. Because that's always a little bit of a bummer when you hit that game-winning shot on the road. I mean, it's cool, too, because you can do, like, the guys running to the tunnel and the fans getting all upset. But there's something special about just, like, that shot goes in and just, you know.
Obviously, the energy is completely different. Yeah, it's obviously more exciting when it happens at home and everyone's happy. that feels better in some
way. Sure.
If you're neutral about the game, if you don't have any stakes in there yet, that definitely feels better when it's in front of the home crowd. But. All right, cool. Well, this is part one. We'll put a pin in this one, and we will come back soon, and we will talk about some of the series clinching buzzer beaters in the later rounds of the playoffs. So thanks, everyone, for checking us out. You can find us at the Step Back at fansided.com. You can also find us all of our shows if you go to overandbacknba.com. You can we would love it if you would leave us a rating and review. You can find us on all the major podcast platforms, and if there's one that you love and you want us to be on there, we will definitely work on getting added to there. You can send us any feedback you want to. We're on Twitter and Facebook. Both of those are at Over and Back NBA. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.